Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, David Janes here with you. Derek Mason out today. He will be back tomorrow, joining Jake Lyman, filling in on Stillman and Company. Jared had to sneak in one more vacation after taking a whole week off, you know? Working three times in 12 days. Too taxing for Jared Stillman. Love you, Jared.
The patterns of his coming and going, I don't get. I'd have to learn about that a little bit more. But to each their own. And we will move on without our man, without D-Mace.
We will. SEC Media Days continue today, day three, headlined by Alabama, Florida, Mississippi State, and Oklahoma. Also on the docket for today, Chase and Big Joe are live in Atlanta for SEC Media Days. Our coverage is sponsored by Brewhouse South. Experience Nashville's ultimate sports and brew hangout at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey will join Chase and Big Joe in Atlanta at 12:45. We've also gotten word that David Cutcliffe will join the program. I imagine most of that interview was about Cutcliffe's wonderful 14 years at Duke and nothing else.
Nothing else. I'm sure Arch Manning didn't come up at all.
Nothing about the Mannings. Let's talk about Duke. By the way, he went 77-97.
Well, only because Chase did the interview and not George Plaster, who goes way, way back with Coach Cutcliffe. I can't say for sure that the Braves came up with the All-Star game in Atlanta. If George were doing the interview, I would have bet anything that the Braves would be maybe the first or second question. Chase being a Braves fan, you can't rule it out, but I don't know.
We shall see when Chase and Big Joe are on from noon to 3.
But he is a fun guy to talk football with, that is for sure.
We did have a major whoopsie at SEC Media Days yesterday. A faux pas. I'll go with whoopsie, a major whoopsie. So as many of you know, as each coach walks to the podium to address reporters at SEC Media Days, they're played onto the stage by their school's fight song. So yesterday, as Texas coach Steve Sarkisian walked onto the stage to the podium, he was accidentally played onto the stage with Texas A&M's fight song.
Big whoopsie.
Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
Or was it a prank? Like it was there.
I don't think
was
it
that
was
just like, hey, let's get the let's fuel the rivalry and let's stoke the flames. This is new. They're back in the same conference.
I don't think Sarkisian acknowledged the mistake. But just imagine for a moment, Willie Donick, you're at some sort of Vanderbilt. Well, it wouldn't happen at a Vanderbilt event, but let's say you were at some sort of event and you were the keynote speaker, and it's joining us today the greatest basketball/baseball player in Vanderbilt history.
That may not be true, by the way.
Class of 1992, right? Class of 1993. Class of 1993. Willie Donick, and then Rocky Top starts playing.
I wouldn't be happy.
How would you feel about that?
It would be very disappointing. I would think somebody would be playing a gag, is what I would think.
Oh, man. So
what was his reaction? I didn't
see
it.
He did not react.
He didn't react.
There was
no
reaction.
Did they catch it and stop it, or did they just not realize it and play it all the way?
I think they played it all the way. I remember seeing the video. They played it all the way, and he's just like, all right, guys.
No acknowledgement.
No acknowledgement.
Okay. But a major whoopsie at SEC Media Days, playing the Texas A&M fight song for the Texas coach before he addresses reporters at SEC Media Days. But Willie, last night, I know that you are a baseball purist. You love the All-Star game. We were treated to a first-of-its-kind finish in the Major League Baseball All-Star game. A swing-off after the American League rallied from a 6-0 deficit late in the game to tie the game at 6. The National League wins the swing-off, thanks to Kyle Schwarber. your thoughts on what we watched last night in the Major League Baseball All-Star Game.
First, I think it was great to have a good game. Like that was a good baseball game that had action. The number one thing, honestly, before we get to the swing-off, that was the most disappointing thing was the crowd. I did not like the crowd filed out, and it probably should have. I don't want to just, you know, blast the Braves fans, the Atlanta fans, but Atlanta as a sports town doesn't have the greatest reputation as great sports fans. Hate to say it, and I'm not one that throws gasoline on that fire all the time. I know better, but it's a fact, right? It was ridiculous. You had a really exciting finish, a great comeback, and little by little, there were not that many people in the stands. I didn't think Joe Davis and John Smoltz as a broadcast team did enough to try to bring up the excitement level to make up for they can't do anything about the crowd, but they were just kind of cruising along. And meanwhile, there's this great comeback happening. I'm like, finally, we have a good All-Star game. Let's get hype a little bit. I honestly didn't know about the swing-off. I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know anything about it. And neither, by the way, did Kyle Stowers, who was thrown in there to hit. And if you know who Kyle Stowers is, you probably are in a National League-only fantasy league like me. He plays for the Marlins. Yes, he's an All-Star. He hit 3 home runs in the last game before the All-Star break. I guess somebody from the Marlins had to go. And he said in his little interview going to the plate, I didn't know this was a thing.
It was established in 2022, I learned this morning.
Yes. Well, there was a famous tie years ago, and everybody was bummed out about that. It was like, come on, man. They basically ran out of pitchers, and they had to declare a tie, and so they had to do something about it. So, the swing-off. Look, you and I have covered hockey. I can remember when the shootout came in, and there were a lot of people go, how can you decide a game with a shootout? Well, it's better than a tie, right? So, that's what we had. I thought it was very exciting. Once you got it started, I thought it was good. The thing I didn't like is I thought there should have been a quicker transition from the bottom of the ninth to the start of the swing-off. I thought there was too much of a lag. And I think if Major League Baseball, they tried to do it right. They did their stoppages, and Buster Olney chronicled this. You know, they have a number of things they want to do within the game. They honored Hank Aaron. Nothing wrong with that.
Which was awesome.
It was great, yeah.
The Hank Aaron tribute was awesome.
It was great. But you do a number of these different things during the game, and it slows the pace down, and I think it has people leaving. But ironically, this is what was interesting, and I sent you this, Adam, from Buster Olney. Thank goodness for the pitch clock was basically the theme of his tweet. They had the longer commercial breaks that you have in the postseason in games like this, which annoy me big time, because the whole thing about baseball is the tempo. They've tried so hard to get the tempo going, and they've helped it a ton. But you have longer commercial breaks for the big games. They had the swing out off, which took extra time, and you got to get the L screen out there to protect the pitcher, right? You got to get all the stuff out there. They lagged there. And why they interviewed each hitter before they came up to the plate, I have no idea why you're doing that. This is a game. You don't need to interview the guy as he goes up to the plate, but they did for all 6 hitters. Not necessary. They had the stand up to cancer pause, which they always do. The Hank Aaron tribute. They had the Freddie Freeman thing, which didn't go over very well. This is, again, where are the Braves fan? If I were a Braves fan, I had a little mixed emotions, right? They sent in Pete Alonso to replace Freddie Freeman at first base in the middle of the inning. And Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, is like, hey, here's a chance for the Braves fans to salute Freddie Freeman. But he's on the Dodgers. It's been a few years. Like, he's been on the Dodgers for a while. He's a World Series hero for the Dodgers. Is a Braves fan still like, oh, let's have a huge stop the game ovation for Freddie Freeman? I didn't think that was great, but that slows the game down. The game still only lasted 3 hours and 20 minutes. Now, back in the day, before the pitch clock, that game would have lasted well over 4 hours. And we would have been complaining and yawning, and the crowd really would have filed out, I think. So the pitch clock and the pace of the game has helped immensely. I love the product. I still don't think in the big summer showcase that they quite have it right. It was better. They had the uniforms back. They got a really good game. The swing off is good. I got no problem with the swing off. Because what else are you going to do? The extra innings, is they're not going to do that anymore. We got to get real. So the swing off is good. We just need to tweak it a little bit. So improvement. But my biggest takeaway was, where the heck did come on, people. You're at the All-Star game. Stay to the end of the game.
Here was the disappointing aspect of the swing off for me. Now, I understand that the Major League Baseball All-Star starters, once they're taken out of the game, they bounce. And the lineup for the swing-off was Brent Rooker, Jonathan Aranda, and Randy, is it Arozarena?
Arozarena.
Arozarena, yeah. Versus Pete Alonso, Kyle Schwarber, and Kyle Stowers. Jeff Passan said, what could have been? Aaron Judge, Cal Raleigh, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. versus Shohei Ohtani, Pete Alonso, and Kyle Schwarber. Now, Ohtani and Guerrero and Raleigh and Judge, they may have left the ballpark by the time the swing-off occurred. But just imagine how much interest there would have been, even that late at night. If you knew that Aaron Judge was going up against Shohei Ohtani, among others, in a mini home run derby to decide the All-Star game, I would have tuned in for that. And look, it was probably out of the manager's control, but that was a slightly disappointing aspect of the swing off, that the biggest home run hitters, the biggest names were probably gone by then, so they couldn't participate.
I was still confused because I didn't know what the format was. But remember, the National League was one strike away from winning the game in the top of the ninth. So you didn't think you were going to have this. They were up 6-0. So there was no thought in the seventh inning that this was going to be anything but just a rare win for the National League. And thank goodness they won if you're a National League fan, because that would have been another note, losing 11 out of 12. So I think it was thrown together late, or at least in the bottom of the ninth. They had to scramble and say, well, we need three guys. The National League, with Alonso and Schwarber, those are two guys that you would have,
yes,
for sure. And Alonso didn't even have to hit because they had won it, because Schwarber was unbelievable. He hit three straight when they were behind. So that was pretty dramatic in itself. But yeah, we would have loved to have seen Ohtani and Judge. I don't know if they had literally left the park, because that does happen sometimes, or used to happen. You had Tarek Skubal, the starting pitcher for the Tigers, out there, street clothes. He had a collared shirt on. He's just standing there like, who is this guy? He had no baseball hat on or anything. It was like, oh, that's the starting pitcher. He's the best pitcher in the American League. I think it'll take a little getting used to. Who knows? It may be 15 years before you ever do this again. Right? So it wasn't perfect. So I don't know all the reasons why they chose the guys, but Jonathan Aranda, really? That's the guy for the American League of all the guys in that dugout? He didn't even have a hat on. He had a do-rag on. Like, what are you doing? And he hit the top of the wall that would have tied it, which was kind of fun. And so it was the actual way it played out was really cool, but there were some questions as to why they had the guy. Did they ever explain why they had Stowers and Aranda?
If they
no offense
did,
to those guys. Guys, that's the all-stars, right? Get the guys in there that people know.
If they did, I did not see. Yeah. By the way, David James has brought to my attention that SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey, who again will join Chase and Big Joe today at 12:45, opens today's proceedings with an apology for Texas A&M's fight song being played when Steve Sarkisian took the stage. Now, I can't hear his apology, so I don't know if it's tongue-in-cheek or not, but Sankey has apologized.
He felt the need to address it, I guess.
One texter said, Aggie grads are lame enough to risk their little sound booth job for that cringe, hilarious prank 1,000%. Must be a Texas fan. One hockey-related note. The NHL schedule will be released today, I believe, at noon.
Oh, very exciting.
But the Predators have announced their home opener. The Predators will open this. Well, I don't know if they'll open the season at home, but they will have their home opener October 9th against the Columbus Blue Jackets. So the Predators' home opener for the 2025-2026 season will be October 9th against the Columbus Blue Jackets at Bridgestone Arena. So I don't know if that's their season opener. They may start on the road. The full schedule comes out at noon, but the Predators will open the season at, well, they will open the home portion of their schedule. I do have to keep doing this. They will open the home portion of their schedule October 9th against Columbus at Bridgestone Arena.
I'm excited to see the schedule. We know in there is a trip to Sweden,
yes,
for the Global Series. It's not at the beginning of the season like it was a few years ago when the team went to Prague and Bern for the preseason. That might have been the most fun part, to see Roman Josi play in his hometown and the way the crowd reacted to that. So it is going to be a unique season because you have the Stockholm trip and an Olympic break in the middle of the season. So it's going to be very compressed. There's going to be a lot of stretches, I'm sure, of 3 games and 4 nights and 4 and 6 and all of that. So depth will be important.
So that means you'll be headed to Sweden, yes?
I don't know officially if that's the case. Most of the time, those games are not picked up by national broadcasts. And so if that's the case, I think my chances are good.
You will have to do the show from Sweden.
Oh, we have to.
You will do the show from Sweden. Did you do the show from Prague?
I did some of the shows from Prague, but it was the time change was made it a little difficult, a little bit difficult. We will try.
Let's see what time
there were
it is.
Some on-air things from Prague, but I don't know if it was broadcast excellence. I might have been half asleep. I don't know if it was like, it's like 10 or 11 p.m. or something.
Stockholm is 7 hours ahead of us. So that means
that's similar to Prague, I think.
You'll be on with us at 6 o'clock p.m. in Sweden.
Okay. Hey, that's drive time in Sweden.
Josh on our text line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, says, I think they wanted to use guys that were more on the Savannah Bananas level instead of actual MLB All-Stars. Another texter says, the Major League All-Star game will never matter again unless they bring back the rule that it decides World Series home field. Dumbest decision baseball has ever made. Had the only All-Star game in pro sports that mattered outside the Cup All-Star race, and they ruined it.
Well, that wasn't the rule until after the tie. After the tie in whatever year that was, 2003 or 2004, John Smoltz was talking about he was actually in that game. That's when they came up with the rule. And by then, I think people would argue that it had already started to lose the luster. In the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, it was such a big, big thing. Before cable really took off and before you really had a chance to see the best players a whole lot, other than the odd game of the week. Maybe when I was a kid, Monday Night Baseball, you'd have a chance to see more of the guys. It was such a big showcase, and you had a massive, massive audience. So I don't know that that's it. I would like to see a little more intensity in the game. I do not like at all the mic'd up player in the field. I don't like it. Never have. Especially the pitcher and the catcher is what they did in the first inning. Tarek Skubal, I don't think it's a coincidence. The guy hadn't given up a run all year. The guy's unbelievable, and he gives up 2 runs in the first inning. And he's trying to make sense of the fact that his catcher, the announcers, and himself are mic'd up. They're trying to have a conversation. He's trying to get Shohei Ohtani and Ronald Acuna out. If I were pitching, I'd be like, I'm not signing up for that. Oh, it's the All-Star game. Don't worry about it. No. I'm trying to win. I don't want to get embarrassed. I'm trying to get Shohei Ohtani out. And you're telling me I have to hear in my ears Joe Davis and John Smoltz laughing. Hey, Tarek, that was a nice pitch you had right there. Come on. I did not like that at all. Let's play a game. So I'm with the caller on that. I don't think it has anything to do with the home field advantage. I don't really care one way or the other on that. If you want to do it, fine. But let's play a game. This is baseball. You can play a real game where everybody goes hard and competes, which is what they used to do. You could always get hurt even if you're not going hard. So there's no reason not to compete. So I want to see the intensity level go up a little bit.
Hair Middle Henry on our text line says, Willie has to go to Sweden so he can bring you guys back some official fish and meatballs. I'm not sure fish will travel across the Atlantic Ocean well, so maybe not the fish. Probably not the meatballs either.
If they were packaged somehow, maybe I can consult Philip Forsberg and you know, some of his friends over there.
Mm-hmm.
If I could package it frozen or something and assure you that it would preserve, would you be interested?
If I knew I wasn't going to get sick eating it, I would be open
perhaps.
To it.
You like fish?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll see what we can do.
I'll bring
you some sort of trinket from Sweden if I am honored enough to go.
And just by my quick search of social media, just based on the date of the Predators home opener, I'm going to guess that is also the season opener.
You think so?
October 9th at home against Columbus. But the full NHL schedule.
What's the first day of the season? They announced that the other day, right? The opening night?
That it would have been that Wednesday. October 7th.
The 7th.
Is a Tuesday. So the Predators home opener will be on a Thursday.
Okay.
Unless they are starting with a back-to-back, which I don't know how often that would
happen.
So
they don't play Tuesday. We know that, right?
Right. They play their home opener is that Thursday. Right.
So it would need to be a game in like St. Louis the night before, right, which is probably unlikely. They usually don't do that.
So if I had to guess, the home opener will also be the season opener for the Predators October 9th against the Columbus Blue Jackets, but the full NHL schedule will be released at noon.
Now we'll see if they yank it from us like they did last time, put it on ESPN Plus, and we don't get to do it. That was such a buzzkill last year. You're at the first game. All right. And ESPN's doing it, and we're sitting in the stands.
Hair Metal Henry says you should bring back Swedish fish, the candy. We know that will travel well across the Atlantic Ocean. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, our favorite dual-threat quarterback, Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst.
Hold on.
Yes?
I think we've been had. Somebody just texted, said, Swedish fish? Are we talking about actual fish or the candy Swedish
fish?
Well,
Hair Metal Henry was talking about the fish and said, come on, man. I've been
duped. I do really like Swedish fish.
I like them too. But I've been duped.
They're pretty good.
That's okay. We're all taken every once in a while. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN. NFL.
I'm bringing a real fish back. There are real fish in Sweden. I'm bringing it back, and it will be a delicacy, okay?
Yes, absolutely.
And we will put, it's just this kind of, you know, a appetizer around it, some Swedish fish as well, because they're good.
So take that, Henry.
Take that, guy.
615-737-1025. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the Ensworth Tigers, will join us next as training camps rapidly approach. The Titans report to training camp in 6 days. We will talk about all of that with Tim coming up next. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025, 1063, the game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by our favorite dual-threat quarterback. He's an ESPN NFL analyst. He's also the head coach of the Ensworth Tigers football team. It's Tim Hasselbeck. Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well, thank you. So I imagine that you have spent a lot of time discussing the top 10 quarterback list that Jeremy Fowler compiled earlier this week with help from league people at ESPN.com. What was the most surprising element of that list to you when you read it for the first time?
That Jaden Daniels was at like 4.
He was at 5, yeah.
At 5? Yeah, he was so high. Like, I mean, you know, in front of guys like Matthew Stafford, Jalen Hurts, who just won a Super Bowl. I mean, I just, you know, so I think that, yeah, like that for me, I would say, you know, a bit of an aggressive move. So, yeah, I think that one surprised me. I don't know if I had any other ones. You know, like Hurts to me being at 9, right? Do I have it right that he's at 9?
Yes, I was just about to ask you about him. So, yes, he's at 9.
Yeah, I mean, guy's been at 2 Super Bowls. It's like, so. And I think there are elements to say, look, if you were to move him and you were to put Hurts in Detroit and Jared Goff in Philadelphia, like what would the end result be? Like, so I get it that, you know, that like there are probably some things that you're splitting hairs and you don't know, and that's projections. But like it feels to me like some disrespect.
I was going to ask you about Jalen Hurts because he landed at 9 on this list. The highest ranking he received was 6. The lowest ranking he received was unranked. So somebody who did this exercise for Jeremy Fowler did not have Jalen Hurts ranked on this list. And as you said, he's a Super Bowl winner who plays big in big moments. As it's written here at ESPN, he's the most potent short yardage quarterback rusher in NFL history. Yeah. He's also one of the game's most accurate passers. And yet, as you said, there seems to be a lot of disrespect. There's a passage at the end of this that I would love your opinion on. Fowler wrote, quote, "More than a few voters see shades of a Russell Wilson career arc. Hurts has many traits that contribute to winning at a high level, but needs a steady running game around him and wouldn't necessarily thrive in a pass-heavy system." So what's it going to take for Jalen Hurts to get more respect?
Well, by the way, like a Russell Wilson career arc, like Russell Wilson for a period of time, like was playing like an MVP candidate. Like, you know, I don't know what'll happen when it's all said and done as these passing numbers, you know, go crazy and stuff. But like does Russell Wilson, I'm not saying Russell Wilson's a Hall of Famer, but like he's going to be up for consideration at some point. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's, That seems weird to me to be like, hey, like that wouldn't be good. There was definitely a period of time where Russell Wilson was a top five quarterback, like 100%. So, like that's a weird comment to me. The idea that he's unranked, and look, Jeremy, you know, is well connected, knows a lot of people and all that stuff. I mean, that's crazy to me. Like, I would love to know what organization that person works, you know, for, and if they are any good. Like, it doesn't make sense. We were talking about it on NFL Live yesterday, and one of the things I said was, you know, as we evaluate quarterbacks, like, I think we would all agree is leadership is maybe one of the most important qualities for a quarterback. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Okay. Like, are there a bunch of guys leading better than Jalen Hurts is leading? Like I compared him to Eli Manning. I used to say, like, with Eli, he was so steady, he was so consistent, and his leadership was really unquestioned because, like, you never knew if his dog died or he won the lottery. Like, that's kind of how he was every day. And I think Jalen Hurts the same way. Like, you look at the way Jalen Hurts leads, like, he's unfazed. He's not flustered by things. And so, like, the idea that, I don't know, that Kyler Murray is probably ranked by everybody with his leadership style and Jalen Hurts is not ranked by everyone, that's wild to me.
Tim, I want to ask you about Juwan Jennings. There was a report earlier this week that the San Francisco 49ers wide receiver, also a former member of the Tennessee Volunteers, wants a new contract or a trade. And of course, a lot of Vols fans in our area, our text line was blowing up with people clamoring for the Tennessee Titans to make a run at Juwan Jennings. But Willie and I were curious about how Jennings would perform outside of San Francisco, outside of the Kyle Shanahan system, scheme, whatever you want to call it. So assuming that Jennings is indeed wanting to be moved, do you think that if he were to leave San Francisco, he would be, how good of a wide receiver do you think he could be outside of San Francisco is the question I'm asking.
I don't know that I wouldn't say that he's a number one wide receiver, but I think that he's a starting wide receiver. I think, you know, the size, the physicality, the ability to make contested catches, you know, a willing and capable blocker, like all of those things. I don't think the system is making the player with him, you know. Now, you look at what's going on with receiver money, like every, you know, like maybe there are a bunch of number two wide receivers out there that are, they're going to be looking for, you know, number one wide receiver money. And like that, I think is just not, you know, that, there are some guys that can find themselves in some tough spots if they're trying to accomplish that.
Tim Hasselbeck
fit that mold.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. And Tim, that brings you to sort of the dilemma that the Titans are in, because your options, if you were to go down this path, because it's easy for especially somebody here in this market who watched Juwan Jennings play in Knoxville, maybe watched him in high school right around the corner. Like, hey, bring him here. You need wide receivers. And that looks to be true, right? He's better than a lot of the guys they have on the roster for sure. But are you going to give up an asset? And if so, how much would you be willing to part with? And then are you just taking him for 1 year? Or are you going to commit to, as you kind of just alluded to, the next contract in a wide receiver market that you got to pay pretty handsomely for?
Yeah, I mean, and that's why, like, are you going and chasing Juwan Jennings? And what kind of leverage does he have to really say, like, hey, no, I'm not playing without a new contract? You know, like when Terry McLaurin says, I'm not playing without a new contract, you know, then at that point, what you can say is, you know, look, we're trying to accomplish big things here, and we can't because, you know, our number one wide receiver is holding out. And so, like, when that happens, you know, I think you have to say, like, all right, maybe we've got to make a concession here to get this deal done. Like, I don't think you need to do that when you're talking about, like, that next tier of wide receiver. I think you say, like, you're not going to hold out because that's going to be way too expensive for you, and quite honestly, just it won't make sense.
Mm. I'm curious, as we look at some of the storylines we're going to see in training camp, I'm curious about the Lions and their attempt to bounce back after just an amazing regular season and then the bad playoff game. The Titans fans can relate, right? You have this great season, you set yourself up, and then you don't play well in the big game. So what do you, when you look at that young roster that still looks like it's in a window where you can win, what do you expect from them?
Say the team again?
The Lions.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, the change at coordinator, I think, is the big issue there. You know, you look at teams that have changed both coordinators. Obviously, Philly did a good job of it last year. They were terrible at it, you know, the previous time they did it. Look at Dallas did it a few years ago. They were awful with it. It's a lot. Coaching matters. So, look, I think that, you know, Dan Campbell's going to kind of show his – you know, head coaching ability in terms of how he helps manage that entire situation. And look, I think they have good players, but, like, you know, they didn't just lose coordinators. They also lost, you know, guys that were also on the coaching staff. So I think that change is hard. I think the division is difficult. And I think because of that, I do think we'll see a bit of a step back out of Detroit.
Hmm. What about what you see with Mike Vrabel and the Patriots? I'm sure the sideshow here, like if there's a team outside of the Titans, people will be watching closely in this market. I think you could argue that the Patriots will be pretty high on the list, maybe the other division teams, etc. But there's a lot of curiosity on Mike Vrabel in his second coaching stint.
Yeah, I think it's a massive upgrade at the coaching position in New England. And then I think beyond that, what you're getting is Josh McDaniels to coach the offense, and I think there's better talent than there was there a year ago. So I think when you add all of those things together, what were they, a three-win team? You know, now you got what was a three-win team that could easily, you know, may be a hard out for everybody that they play. So I look, sometimes everyone jumps on a team too early. That may be New England, but I do think the 2-3 year forecast on New England is really good.
You've done a lot of ACC games over the years, so you have a perspective that's unique in this market where we're so tied into SEC day in and day out, week in and week out. As you try to sort out what the next playoff is going to look like, if you're representing the ACC, what do you want to see in there with the leverage that they have or don't have?
Well, I mean, I think what you'd want to see is, you know, obviously you'd be guaranteed that you're going to have one of your teams in it, right? I mean, I think that, you got to start there. You know, the idea that there would even be a chance to have more than, you know, one team in it, you know, you would like to say that. But, like, truthfully, like, I mean, you look at what happened to Florida State, you know, obviously there were some injuries and stuff like that, like, yeah, look, I think top to bottom, the conference in general has just got to get better football. Like when you have, you know, schools like Clemson and Florida State, like not really being shy about the idea that, like, look, we want out, like this TV deal is not the deal we want, then, like, to me, when that starts happening, when, like, the best teams in your conference are saying that, then, you know, I think it's hard for you to even, you know, create a case, you know, for anything you know, anything more than you're kind of naturally getting, you know, from the committee as it stands now.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, head coach of the Ensworth Tigers, joining us here on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick as he does every week. Tim, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Sounds good. See you, folks.
Tim Hasselbeck on the program. 615-737-1025. I do have a question for all you Titans fans out there, which I will ask you coming up next. But before we get there, go to thegamenashville.com/deals now. First, actually, let me go back because I forgot a line. Don't miss out on some of Nashville's best deals. Then go to thegamenashville.com/deals now, and you can purchase half off on gift cards for Mellow Mushroom, Red's Hot Chicken, Beach Bend Amusement Park and Splash Lagoon Water Park, Single Tree Barbecue, 312 Pizza, Bad Axe Throwing, Brewster's, Barrio Burrito Bar, and many more. The Borchetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix is coming to the Nashville Super Speedway on Labor Day weekend, and 102.5 The Game has your chance to win VIP tickets to the IndyCar race. Text in the word RACE, R-A-C-E, now to 615-737-1025 to be entered to win a pair of VIP tickets. For more information on the event, visit MusicCityGP.com. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan here with you. My question to all of you Titans fans out there, also at 615-737-1025, who is the most important non-quarterback for the Titans this coming season? Again, who is the most important non-quarterback for the Titans this coming season? CBS Sports did this exercise recently and did it for every team. And Willie, I'll admit, I was a bit surprised by CBS's choice for the Tennessee Titans. It was Dan Moore. Dan Moore, according to CBS Sports, is the most important non-quarterback for the Titans this season. The author writes, quote, "Last year's number one overall pick, Caleb Williams, came into his rookie season with a supporting cast that looked strong on the surface, but was revealed not to be, thanks to a combination of porous offensive line play, dreadful play calling, and scheming. The Titans have surrounded this year's number one pick, Cam Ward, with a similar-looking cast of players, and they'll be hoping that their investment on Dan Moore to protect Ward's blind side pays off so that he can have a normal rookie year rather than having to run for his life as often as Williams did during his own debut campaign. They also hope that Ward will do a better job of playing on time than Williams did, who often exacerbated the line issues by holding the ball for way too long." So CBS Sports says that Dan Moore is the most important non-quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a sensible pick. I wouldn't have gone there. I'm going to go in a different direction, but I see exactly what he's saying. So much is riding on giving Cam Ward a chance to develop. Give him a chance, and by doing that, you have to protect him. You have to have better offensive line play. And I don't think Will Levis can look back and say, well, if we had a better offensive line, I would have done better. I think there was too much on Will Levis for that. But at the same time, it's so important in the developing stage of the number one pick, and they have put so many eggs in Cam Ward's basket, that it's worth doing whatever you can to support him, even at the expense of the defense. But as D-Mace has pointed out, playing good defense is a way to support a rookie quarterback. So I am going to say Jeffrey Simmons is by far the most important guy for two reasons. A, if you want to have a good defense, he's got to have a great year. But also, I am going to continue to sing this song, and I may be going against the grain because it's hard to do, but Jeffrey Simmons is the only guy that can get you, now that you've drafted Cam Ward, he's the only guy that can get you anything close to the number of picks that you want to have, which they have said they want to have, and I'm going to keep reminding them that they said it, because they said, well, you know, the picks don't matter. If you've got the guy, if you've got your quarterback, you take him with the first overall pick. That's fine, but they passed on a treasure chest of picks. But now that they've passed on that, I think they really have to wrap themselves around the idea of trading Jeffrey Simmons. But for them to get good return for Jeffrey Simmons, they need a good season for Jeffrey Simmons. Now that they've already gone through the window of the offseason, I think even a trade deadline deal this year, which I don't know how much teams would be willing to part in the middle of the season. I don't know when the best – they may have missed their window to trade him, to be honest. But either way, he needs to be what they – what he can be, what he has been, and be the return on the investment that they hope he will be. He's such an important player. I don't see how it can't be Jeffrey Simmons.
I think that's probably the right answer, but I dug a little bit more into Dan Moore, especially after the author at CBS Sports pointed out what Caleb Williams endured last season. Caleb Williams was sacked 68 times last season. Let me repeat that. 68 times. Tied for the third most in NFL history. David Carr with the Texans, 76 sacks taken in 2002.
I remember that.
Randall Cunningham, 72 sacks taken in 1986 with the Eagles. By the way, David Carr, I should say, also took 68 sacks in 2005. So Caleb Williams tied David Carr in 2005 with 68 sacks, tied for the third most in NFL history. Man, David Carr took a beating, huh?
He did.
Jeez. And Dan Moore comes in. He is paid handsomely in free agency. That tends to happen in free agency. They put him at left tackle. They move J.C. Latham to the right side. And I'm curious about one thing when it comes to Dan Moore. So when the Titans signed Dan Moore, we did our research, and I rely on Next Gen Stats. You may rely on Pro Football Focus or some other statistical service. And each service has its own way of defining fault for a sack. According to Next Gen Stats, Dan Moore Jr. allowed 16.5 sacks last season, the most among any offensive lineman with at least 200 pass blocking snaps. Now, I did not go back and watch all 16.5 sacks that he allowed, apparently. I don't know how many he was at fault for versus either Russell Wilson or Justin Fields. But that is a big number. And Caleb Williams ended up having an impressive statistical season despite the fact that he was sacked, again, 68 times. He threw for more than 3,500 yards, had 20 touchdown passes, and just 6 interceptions. But being sacked that many times is not a recipe for success. So, as you said, Willie, it's important that Cam Ward stays upright and is not under constant siege by opposing rushers. So that's why I know that Jeffrey Simmons is the sensible choice. I think Dan Moore on offense outside of Cam Ward, because again, it's the most important non-quarterback. I think Dan Moore is an appropriate choice.
Yeah, and I think it's just like anything when you're talking about an offensive line. The offensive line is linked, right? The group of five. It's not only what Moore does individually, but what does it do to strengthen the overall offensive line? So let's put aside the question of Cushenberry coming back from a serious injury in the Achilles, which we don't know when we're going to see him. But just the move of Moore and then Latham over to the right, what does that do to the overall strength of the offensive line? That is really the question. And if you all of a sudden, the domino effect of Moore being solid and then Latham taking a jump, being on the right side, now just at those two positions, you've got a big net gain. So I'm looking at that as a big, big thing. Could that be the move, right, that suddenly takes the offensive line into at least middle of the pack and not at the bottom of the NFL where every game you go into, you're thinking, oh my gosh, can we block? What plays can we run? Can we protect the quarterback? Is our quarterback going to get killed? These are all the things that if they can avoid those questions and go into games at least confident that they have a chance to block and run the plays they want to run and give the rookie a chance, that's a big, big thing.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Who is the most important non-quarterback for the Tennessee Titans this coming season? Let us know. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game.